You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 443. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, does this crew have a name? It's not the New Classic crew, right?
We were the Trauma Unit for a while.
We can still be that. It's John Gentile out in Philadelphia and Tom Trauma out in Michigan, Grand Rapids-ish, right?
Yeah, we should think of a name. We should we should have the listeners write in. And like whoever picks the best name, I'll send them like a bunch of flexies or something.
Jeez. All right, that's a big prize.
I don't collect flexies. I'm getting a real pile of these things.
And I'm not sure stupid. Flexies are stupid.
They sound well. Here's the thing. I'm resentful of anything I had to I had to switch the record after 2 minutes.
Well, flexies are stupid because, I mean, the idea of a flexi was to be given away in, like, magazines and with Happy Meals and stuff. And now bands are just putting out flexies instead of 7 inches, even though they're really not that much cheaper.
Well, I've got – the ones I have are promo ones. I don't really have any that I would consider – I don't think I have any that are standalone. I think they're mostly – you know, like certain magazines have flexies in them and certain big record labels just throw these things out by the thousands. So, yeah, I'm getting a big pile of them. But anyway, I would like the readers to come up with a good name for our
modern sex symbols.
The new classic crew. Yeah. We're like the new Coke.
The new classic crew.
We're like the new Coke. People don't like us.
So, I mean, that might dovetail into the one of our, I don't know how secret it is. We probably talked about it on here. Plans is that, and this is something for the listeners to give us some feedback on. If we were to rename this podcast, is that cool with everyone? I don't even know if that's cool.
Did
with Tom.
We talk about that?
Me and John. I want to open it up to the people here for conversation.
I was going to say I don't think I was in on that conversation.
So,
but I don't know.
On the one hand, this is the Punk News Podcast because that's what it started as, and that's what it is, and we're all from the Punk News universe. So, of course, it's the Punk News Podcast. But on the other hand, this has grown from a general, you know, what's going on Punk News. From, you know, whichever editors happen to be around to something where there's, you know, there's some pretty set personalities on this show. We have a lot of weird tangents that we tend to go on. There's people that I have proof of this because we did that survey. There's tons of people that listen to this show without ever going to punknews.org for any particular reason. So I wonder.
I have come to that conclusion, too, that the listeners of the podcast and the readers of the site are fairly distinct groups. I'm sure there's some crossover, but there is a lot of different people at each thing. Yes.
So what I want to put out there for people to chew on here is that we're not making it not a Punk News Podcast or even not the Punk News Podcast. But does this show have some sort of name and identity of itself that exists like above and beyond what's going on Punk News? We haven't made a decision about this, but you know, if this,
I mean, should we not be so tied into the news of the week, which sometimes can be quite mundane?
Well, I mean, sometimes if there isn't news of the week, we just get on here and talk about things, right? But just like if you were to tune into this show and this show was called, you know, the John Gentile Flower Hour, sponsored by punknews.org. Is that something people would be into? Of course, not that name, but I'm curious. I'm curious if we stuck our neck out and got some independent identity, if people would care. Like would everyone unsubscribe and be like, "No man, I'm only in it for the strong punknews.org branding." I don't know why, but maybe.
I loved it when it was the Punk News Podcast, but I hate it now that it's three old men yell at a cloud podcast.
So we need to find out what we're going to do there. Also, and I apologize to the listeners for this, I am eating...
What kind of pizza are you eating, Adam? I can hear you chewing. What is this? Anything good, or is it like some microwave bullshit?
You know what? I feel like I'm going to get crap for it, but okay. So first of all, I haven't eaten anything since noon. So get off my ass, listeners. We're recording at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, it's 4:30 p.m., Adam. You can make it a couple more hours.
No. Yeah. It's a pizza that we just homemade while the kids were getting in bed. And it has it's one of those ones that healthy internet dicks make where they make the crust out of cauliflower. Because I learned how to do that.
Ah, yeah.
So anyways, that's what I'm doing.
Labor intensive.
Yeah, it was, would I, now I'm dying. Oh, no. Would I have just got a pizza and put it in the oven that came out of a box? We wouldn't be recording this show late, but I'm being an asshole about everything right now.
Do you guys have Little Caesars up there?
Yes.
That's like the ultimate. Make ghetto pies. They're like $5 to $6 here.
Yeah.
And like, sorry. For sports parents, yeah, tell you how many of those garbage pizzas we've shoved in our face just because they have these hot and ready, and you can literally just swing by. It's faster than McDonald's, and I mean, we haven't had to do that lately, but when the kids were really busy, man, we ate a lot of that garbage.
Yeah, we do. Taste all right. We do have those right now. They don't fit with my lifestyle of being not dead, but.
A pothead.
Yeah. So anyways, that's
actually, what I think that would totally fit with your pothead lifestyle.
No, I didn't say pothead. I said not dead.
I said
pothead. Ah, all right. So anyways, I apologize for the podcast chewing.
John, you're anti-drug. You eat Little Caesars pizza.
Honestly, I live on the east coast of the United States in Philadelphia.
It's too much good pizza.
Arguably the best or second best place for pizza in the entire world. So not really.
Gotcha. All right, fine. You're too good for it. No, one of those pies, John. $6, man. That's your whole dinner.
Yeah, I mean it's cheap, but I mean, like if you buy a $6 Little Caesar pizza, you're like, oh, this is so good. You eat like 3/4 of it, and you're like, oh my god, someone take me out back and shoot me.
You are 100% on. I've never felt good the next morning after eating a Little Caesar pizza.
So speaking of being brought out back and shot, John, is there any mail?
Yes, a couple of letters. This is from Richard from the UK. Hey, guys, didn't realize this, but Satan's Rats morphed into the photos with Wendy Wu as the lead singer, who was a bit of a punk pinup at the time, a la Blondie. They end up signing for Epic and having a pretty big hit in the album charts in 1980. More new wave than punk. I never saw them because I was only 14 and they only paid 18 plus venues. Let's see. All my photo singles were stolen in 2018, but pleasantly I still have the LP, which contained the limited live album. Part of the reason it got to number 4 of the first week before it tanked and it disappeared into obscurity. I really enjoyed the Liverpool Neil stuff. I wondered whether we ever crossed paths in the 80s. I vaguely remember writing someone called Neil and swapping stuff, Small World. Love the podcast, and Adam should go to Psychedelic Mud Bath. Celery is no way to go through life, son.
Aha.
There you go, Adam. That's the push you needed.
That is the push I needed, and I trust the opinion of our UK or formerly UK based listeners more than everyone else, really.
And this is from, I don't even know if this is a real person or not. They didn't sign it, and the email address is like just a jumble. So I think they might have used one of those things where you can like send an email but secretively. You know what I mean? I visit
too high tech for me.
Yeah, I visit punk news for punk. I'll put up when you review Ronaldo's emo stuff, but Avengers Endgame, you're all just mainstreaming it now. So much for punknews.org. And that's from someone anonymous.
This goes right back to what I was saying about the name of the show, right? So
I thought I was going to say it's right back to what I was saying about John being the Thanos of the podcast.
I'll take that.
I'm sorry, Adam. Go ahead.
So, well, hold on a sec here, because this actually goes perfectly with that. So now I have not looked at this, but I know we published it. So Ronaldo wrote a review of the Avengers movie that we're not going to spoil on air because we're nice. So Ronaldo wrote a review of this movie, and we published it because our general editorial slant is that if the writers who regularly write stuff for us want to write about whatever, we will probably publish it because they ain't getting paid. We ain't getting paid. You know, keeps everyone happy if we publish the things people write, so long as it's within, like, you know, the loosest of readability guidelines. And that's that. Now, do I want to catch shit from some anonymous email guy on my podcast about a review that I had nothing to do with and have no particular opinion about one way or another? No, but we are the punknews.org podcast, so I guess that makes us the punknews.org complaint department. So it is an interesting...
It sort of is.
Right? So that is an interesting riff on that. John, though, should this person be upset that we published a thing, and did we publish it for the mad clicks?
No, the reason we publish it is several fold. The first is I will not hear complaints about people being mad about us reviewing non-punk things. The reason being is when we post a UK subs review, when we post a kicker review, when we post a Devil Mass review, a Zorn review, when we post a Trash Knife review, when we post a Brood review, when we post the punkest of punkest of punk, crickets. Crickets. So until people start actually really overtaking and talking about the punks of the punk, then I don't want to hear you complaining about non-punk stuff. What you're really saying is, oh, I only want to read about hot water music and mid-tempo beardo stuff. You know what I mean? Well, that's not the entire world of punk. So that's the first answer. Until the actual punk stuff gets like super busy, then I'm not even going to entertain complaints about what is and what is not punk and whether or not we should include that. Second of all, as I've said before, to me, punk rock is not limiting. Punk rock is an expansive thing. That is, punk rock isn't about burying your head into the sand about the outside world. Punk rock is about seeing the outside world through a particular vision or through a particular perspective or something like that. So we don't ignore what's in the outside world. We address what's in the outside world with the values that we hold dear. Plus, comic books and punk is sort of connected, you know, nerds and punk sort of connected. And also, we post, 30 times, 90 to 120 reviews. Avengers is not going to hurt the other 89 reviews that are about punk or essentially punk. So if you think punk is so weak that one review about the Avengers can hurt punk, then you must not think that much of punk. And in that situation, it's not something worth protecting. I, however, think punk is much stronger than that. And one Avengers review, one review of a mainstream record, isn't going to hurt punk or the world that we live in. So I'm not worried about it, bro.
Whoa. All right. So that's John's opinion there.
The one guy, John, who listens to both the podcast and reads the site, you managed to offend. Congratulations.
Well, he can reach that podcast at punknews.org, but he knows that, but maybe he'll email.
But yeah, and what John always says is, hey, if you want to write more X-ray specs, reviews or whatever, do it, you know?
Well, yeah.
Fix it that way by participating.
And actually, we have been getting a lot more, I'll call them random people that we don't know submitting reviews, which is great. I mean, that's great, you know?
It's so that's awesome. Hardcore stuff. It's been good.
I got to keep complaining. Someone submitted a review of Pup. It was a young lady from Spain. Pup's punk or punkish, and people were crying about that, and they're like, oh, well, we don't need this review, you know, because this record came out, and oh, this person's English isn't that good. It's like, yeah, it's a young lady from Spain who's doing her first ever review, which is kind of the purpose of punk news, kind of, we'll post your stuff even if you're kind of new to the game or whatever, you know what I mean? So, you know what I mean?
People are the worst, John. People are the worst.
So listen, I'll take the young girl from Spain writing about Pup over some guy that cries about not enough hot water music reviews every day of the week. I'll take Ronaldo, who writes a billion reviews a year, even though he only covers his emo, basically. But that's good because he keeps that base covered for us. I'll take that over someone that sits on their hiney and complains every day of the week. That's, bro. Podcast at punknews.org.
X-ray specs week. We'll do all the X-ray specs records. The first one,
the first one with bonus tracks, the double disc version of the first one, the anthology, which is basically the first one and a few demos.
The final reissue of the first one.
Exactly.
There was a second X-ray specs record. It came out in the 90s. I've never heard it. It had middle of the road reviews. Yeah, well, according to Wikipedia. There was a record out in 1995 called Conscious Consumer. And let's see, what is it? Da, 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 da. Saw the return of saxophonist Laura Logic, but since it's their second record, I don't know where she went because
Wow, I'm looking at it right now. Is polystyrene on it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
She's on it.
Is it?
Whoa.
All right. Well,
check this.
That was a golden era, man. That in the mid-90s, a lot of bands that got back together for one-offs. A lot of them were pretty terrible, but some of them were pretty good. There was that little bit of revival, you know, that 94 kind of Green Day thing actually got some of the older bands signed. And it also, there was not that bad of a period. Considering the 90s overall were not exactly that great for punk, it was a cool little couple year window in there, but I do not remember that at all.
My mind just got blown. I had no idea. There was a second. Honestly, I bet it's pretty bad, but I will check this out.
All right, we'll dig it up. John, tell people about something that they can't check out because they failed.
Yeah, because you listen. This is the Punkish Podcast hates the listeners and readers week. You all, I am so mad at all of you. I am furious. So Off did a Kickstarter for a movie and live album. Not just an album, a movie and an album, and it was going to be awesome. And they talked about the idea behind the movie was Keith Morris can't get it up anymore. So he goes to a doctor, and a doctor gives him a secret juice. And the juice allows Keith Morris to travel through time and fight crime or something. And it was hilarious and awesome. And they were only asking for
175?
I think it was
either 125 or 175.
Then we'll say 175. Yeah, I guess we'll say 175,000. And so you could get a ton of awesome stuff. You get a DVD. You get the live album. You get handwritten lyrics from Keith Morris. You could get Raymond Pettibon posters. You get Shepard Fairey posters. You could even get a chance to go to the concert where they filmed the live album and be in the movie for a mere like $100. You get a ticket to the show and the live record and something else. And let me tell you, people, I put up my fair share. I had to make 3 accounts to pledge because I really wanted this to fund. I mean, I really, 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 really wanted this to fund. It fell $22,000 short. It's not like it only made $10,000 and didn't make $175,000. It fell $22,000 short. And I am furious with like everyone. I mean, $22,000. Like we could have made this happen, people, but it's because you're all so cheap.
John, you could have thrown like a fundraiser for a fundraiser show. You could have like thrown a couple of big events in Philly to raise money for the fundraiser.
I would have. I would have.
I am not a fan of these things at all. I'm starting to come around, but I am not. I'm not a Kickstarter.
Yeah, but
man.
Tom, it's off.
I know.
Making a movie and a live. Tom, you didn't contribute to this.
They can't get some financial backing.
Well, I think they don't want to have any strings attached, which I appreciate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Harry and the Potters, a band that sings about being Harry Potter, their Kickstarter has been alive for one day, and let me tell you how much it's earned. A band that sings about Harry Potter. Oh, I'm going to be sick. Give me 1 second here. They're up to almost $100,000.
Wow! How much did they need to make a record?
They only asked for $10,000. They're up to $100,000.
Of course, I think they do all covers, so they have to pay royalties on every song they record.
The greatest singer in punk rock and one of the greatest modern punk rock bands wanted to put out an album for the reasonable price of a very reasonable price and a movie. And they couldn't fund, because you'd all rather go get your expensive $8 beers. And I'm furious. I'm furious at the punk community. This was the time to band together, and instead people didn't. They didn't. And now you've all let Keith Morris. How many hundreds of hours of joy has Keith Morris brought you? And you couldn't even give him $20. $50 to make his dream come true. What did it say about you, punk rock? I was there. Where were you, bro?
You were there three times.
Book. I bought his book and almost every record he's ever been on. I've done my part for Keith Morris. He's on his own now. He's a big boy. He's going to have to leave the nest.
Adam, I'm genuinely disappointed, Adam. Are you disappointed?
I'm disappointed, but I feel that my disappointment goes in more of like in a selfish direction where I went like, oh man, that would have been cool to get that skate deck, right? Yours would have, I imagine, like in the last 20 minutes leading up to there, you're just like, fuck it, I'll make more emails. And you just started making more emails and pledging like insane amounts of money towards a record or whatever. That
it definitely seems more personal. It definitely seems more personal for John.
Like, you're on the phone with your loan like shark, banker. And you're just like, yeah. You're like, I need 20 grand. And they're like, what? John, no.
He's like calling the ponies. He's like, I need to put $1,000 on the long shot. One big win and I can fund this thing.
If I was a rich man, I would have thrown in the 20 grand.
Ooh. So, yeah.
Well, you know, the thing I will say about this is they garnered a lot of publicity from this. I wouldn't doubt it if they could make another run at it and succeed.
Well, they said they're going to do it anyways, but, you know, I mean, it would have been nice if the punk community could have chipped in the last 22. We got, what, 80% of the way there or 90% of the way there. It would have been nice if we could have just chipped in the last 5 feet, you know? Man.
What's crazy to me is that they're still, like, if you look at the number of people, there wasn't a ton of people.
Like, it was people like me.
It was what was the end? It was like a couple thousand people, maybe. That was
it was 1,500. I'll pull it up while you guys talk.
And they all the average donation is like $100 or whatever.
Yeah, it probably was. Let's take a look.
It makes you wonder that on one hand, like, how didn't this get on the radar of someone who is like a secret or a not so secret punk fan. That was just like, you know, they're going to be that person on eBay that like chips in right at the very end. Like, I don't know who I'm thinking of here, but like someone with a
John Varvatos. How about John Varvatos? How about John Varvatos, the world famous fashion mogul who's got money to make a documentary about things that we don't need documentaries on? He could have put in $20,000 for the current punk scene instead of the punk scene 40 years ago. How about that, John Varvatos?
Sure, but not even that. I'm talking about like
John. What about the guy who we all wanted to punch, who like raised the price of a life saving drug and used to own a piece of an emo label?
Yeah, he's in jail now. We used to
rage about on the podcast. What was his
name? Martin Shkreli. I don't know if you can eBay for no. I mean.
Or the founders of Fyre Festival. I mean, there's lots of good people out there that could have
helped. It didn't have to be a scumbag. Why couldn't it have been like, I don't know, like Patton Oswalt or someone? Like someone that has like a lucrative entertainment career.
And the guy on Saturday Night Live who has like the old big punk band that...
Fred Armisen.
Yeah, there you go. Fred Armisen.
Like there are plenty of people that could have like ridden in at the last minute and been the White Knight in this and have that not have been John. You. Because what I'm worried, John, is I feel that you at the last moment sat there and like cracked your knuckles and looked at your computer screen and you went, you asked yourself, what would happen if I put $20,000 towards this?
Well, not 20. I did have a number that I said, if it gets close enough and that's the number that has to push it over, I'll push it over. But it didn't get that close.
It's like an eBay auction. Remember back in the day, we'd all sit there and like refresh. What's this album up to that I'm trying to buy? It's Johnson. They're staring at the Kickstarter. Oof.
I watched it to the last second. I thought it was going to make it because it kept shooting up like a little bit by a little bit. And I thought like the band themselves would go in the last minute and just throw in the last money, you know. But maybe they already did put in money beforehand.
Or
you know?
Maybe they don't have any money. Okay, I don't think Keith Morris, reading his autobiography, which is great. And I know you read it too, John. And like I said, I think you're quoted on the back of the paperback.
I gotta get that.
I should shoot you. If you remind me, I'll snap a picture of the back and send it to you.
Yeah.
But anyway, my point being, money is not his thing. I think when he gets a little of it, he doesn't really know. I mean, he's just like a 65-year-old vagabond at this point, basically.
Yeah, he's not backpacks, rich.
He jumps from, you know, he kind of couch surfs when he has to. I think he has a place, but, you know, he's content with that. And that's kind of cool, you know. I should probably be more like that and less worried about all the crap I have stacked around my house, you know. But. Yeah.
So anyways, life is a disappointing slog that just ends in a pit of nothingness. John, you want to play a song that properly expresses your sorrow or whatever?
Yeah, I'm going to play a song by Off called Wipe You Out.
Oh, yeah. We'll be right back.
Okay, we're back. That was off. That's all the off you're ever going to hear because none of you paid enough money.
Off does rule. They do rule. I got to admit it.
Off is so amazing. Like, Off really is an amazing, amazing band. And you like in punk rock, they're like, oh, you know, so-and-so passed away. Oh, he was so great. Let's throw a tribute for him. How about Keith Morris while he's still here kicking ass? How about we appreciate him then, jerks, bro?
Well, anyways, so speaking of jerks, there was a far-right reactionary religious demonstration that took place in Philadelphia. And there were demonstrators there that were arguing such wonderful, wholesome things as a woman's place is in the kitchen. So one of the people from the punk news community who you know has been mentioned on this podcast before decided to do something about it in kind of like a fun, nonviolent way. So there's a band called Pears. You may have heard about them. You may have heard about them much more several months ago when Ricky was on this show because Ricky wouldn't shut up about them. But pears are cool eggs, are good eggs or whatever. We like pears. So anyways, so Jarrett Nathan is Pears' drummer. And being a drummer, he knows his way around the various parts of a drum kit and what kind of noises they make and how they can be annoying if used in an offensive way. So Nathan decided that the best way to oppose this demonstration was to bang on his cymbal for 3 continuous hours in order to drown out one of the demonstrators' megaphones. And it for the most part worked. There is internet of this, or internet, my God, this is what I haven't eaten. There is video of this somewhere on the internet. But that said, when I tried to click on the video right now, it was gone off the internet. So it's somewhere, I'm sure. But, you know, kudos to Jarrett for using the powers of his instrument to fuck with some... fuck with some dicks. Any thoughts on this, John? You're in Philadelphia. Yeah, which side are you on, John?
That's a good question.
And were you annoyed that he drowned you out, John? Were you annoyed that he was drowning out your megaphone?
So listen, we all know that the woman's place is in a home guy is in the kitchen. We know that guy's a dick, right? But I mean,
what was the name of the group? Do you know? I mean, was it just some? I mean, was it like a known group or?
No,
it wasn't like the Westboro Baptist Church. So it was just some.
I heard rumors, which might not be true. Is the guy's not even really that genuine? Is he goes around like doing these kinds of things so people will like punch him?
Like a performance art.
Yeah. But I mean, like someone used to say the way Westboro Baptist Church makes their money is they protest and they wait for people to punch them and then they sue that person. But I can almost guarantee you that's not accurate because let's say you did punch.
Well, the prominent members of that family are lawyers.
I know.
Westboro Baptist.
But I'm saying, like, let's say you punched one of them, right?
Yeah.
And they sue you. It's like if you go to trial on that, like, what jury's going to award them a whole bunch of damages?
You'd have a real hard time finding 12 people to.
Yeah. So I don't believe that. So I don't know if this is true in this scenario or not. Here's the question: is the we'll call him the jerk? Is he's using his right to free speech legally? He's doing a demonstration. He's not being violent. Meanwhile, Jarrett Nathan is also kind of using his free speech by drowning out the other guy. But do we want to use a rule, or is it proper where who's ever loudest wins? I'm not sure if I'm comfortable with that, especially considering our current president.
The one guy did have a megaphone, though, so he was de facto shooting for being loudest. It wasn't like he was like having a – he wasn't doing like a reading of his newsletter in a library or something like that, right?
So you think if he just got in the town square and said, okay, I'm like back in the Greek days, you just get up on a block and just starts talking, you think it would be unfair to drown him out then?
Let's say there's that meme that goes around where like someone's sitting there with a cup of coffee in a chair and it's like, you know, I think something, prove me wrong or whatever. But, You know what I'm talking about, right? So let's say you were doing that. Let's say you went and you set up a booth and you were sitting there to expose your theories. You know, I'm actually a perfect example of this, and I'm sure you have these kind of people in your universe because we have them in ours, and I assume that America is worse. You know, you can say you're at a farmer's market or a shopping mall or something, and you come outside of it, a train station or whatever, and there's some religious folk that are there with their pamphlets. And they're standing around like handing out pamphlets about how you're going to be saved, right? I don't know what denomination does this. I'm not trying to slander anyone, but you know what I mean? like those kind of people where they're not really, they're not yelling at you. They're not getting in your face, but they're just handing out their papers. And, you know, if you're going to stop and talk to them, they're going to talk to you about the good word of the Lord, John. Those kind of people that are just like there, but aren't yelling at you. It would probably be uncool to walk over with your cymbal and start cymbling in their face, you know, to be more annoying than they were, because they were, while their presence is maybe not welcome, they were being minimally disruptive being there. And if you really wanted to go talk to them, then it's kind of your prerogative to do so. Like that, that would seem uncool. But if dude's got a megaphone, if you had a megaphone, I figure you open yourself up to audio repercussions.
It's always interesting, you know, because I think sometimes the protesting crowd, and you got a right to protest in this country. I'm not disagreeing with that for a second. But I think sometimes the protest crowd brings more attention to what they're protesting than they're due. So you get this guy who's out here preaching that a woman's place is in the home. Clearly, he's going to draw, or in the kitchen or whatever. Clearly, he's not going to draw many people with this. And the fact of the matter is now this sort of has new life because of this other story. And I don't know. I just think we need to be cautious about helping draw attention to these people, sort of giving them what they want, that attention. But also, if he's got a megaphone, the other one's got a cymbal, seems like it should really be more a question of who's faster than who's louder. Because all you have to do is like stay 100 feet ahead of him with your megaphone and you can make whatever you want. And the other guy, I met all those guys from the Pears a couple summers ago, and they're all pretty nice, down-to-earth, normal dudes. So
I will say I never support punching someone who's not being violent. So I do appreciate that instead of like saying, yeah, punch a Nazi or whatever, you know, like him just standing there with a cymbal and hitting it. It's like really funny. And I think that might be more appropriate. You know what I mean?
John, but most of these people online who are talking about punching Nazis couldn't beat up my grandma. So I take that with a grain of salt, you know?
I mean, there just is something incredibly comical about a guy standing there just beating on a cymbal like over and over. Like, just like,
he wore earplugs. I'm like, man, that sounds awful.
And like, if you see the video, the only thing that's moving is his one hand and the cymbal. So it's like a still picture, except for his hand that's gone.
I assume you'd have to switch arms. You'd have to switch arms once in a while.
Well,
3 hours. I mean, holy cow, that's like it's like cardio.
Well, it's funny, and that's what counts, people. It's funny.
The important thing is you didn't get your message out, John.
The important thing is that I laughed.
I like the idea that John has to own everything that goes on in the greater Philadelphia area. Yeah. So, right.
Well, listen, I meet someone tell them from Michigan. The first thing they say is, so what's up with that Flint water situation? Like, well, you know, I don't have a lot to do with that, honestly. There's 11 million of us.
Oh, you see, you went from being fun to talking about poor Flint.
Dan, I'm sorry. I brought the crew down.
All right, John, I'm going to give you a choice.
I'm sorry. I meant to say the Flint water crisis is also John's fault.
All right.
It's true.
That one
fell flat, too. All right. Fine.
We'll leave Flint alone right now. John, I'm going to give you a choice on this next story here, because you wrote a very, very amusing several paragraphs about the situation. Would you like to read your piece in its entirety, or would you like me to read your piece?
I guess I'll read it, and then you guys can respond. You want me to read the whole thing, Adam?
Well, I was going to do it, but then I realized how much literary license you took with expressing your amusement in this whole situation. So I feel that I would be I'd be stealing your good words if I was just to read it.
It'd be nice to hear John's inflection, you know, where he wants to put the emphasis and whatnot.
I actually like when Adam reads my stories and finds them amusing, because I'd say Adam generally has good tastes. So if Adam thinks what I've written is funny, then I think it's funny. Then
plus, he's so damn charming with his Canadian accent.
All right, Adam,
read away, Adam, read away.
Here we go. Much like the vengeful phantoms in Amityville Horror or Poltergeist, the malicious spirit of 69 continues to wreak havoc on Woodstock 50. Earlier this week, the funding arm of the event, Dentsu, pulled out of the event and even said it was canceled. Woodstock Ventures LC, the corporation that owns the intellectual property associated with the Woodstock Festival, struck back, saying that they would find new investors, despite the fact that they had still not acquired event permits and a few bands had dropped off the bill. Well, the mountain to Woodstock 50 grew higher today. The production partner, Superfly, pulled out of the event. Superfly is the entertainment company which co-produces the Bonnaroo and Outside Lands Festival. They spoke to Rolling Stone. They said, "The producers of the Woodstock 50th Anniversary Festival hired Superfly to leverage our expertise as veteran event producers to manage the festival operations, a role that aligned with our mission of creating shared experiences that build community. Throughout our engagement, our team provided counsel and recommendation on the necessary elements required to produce a safe and first-class experience. Following the decision of one of our clients, Dentsu, to cancel the event, we will no longer be participating in ongoing related activities." Now, nevertheless, Woodstock Ventures LC, my quote is ended. I'm back to being John here. So nevertheless, Woodstock Ventures LC, they believe in the power of peace, love, and cash, and that will overcome their obstacle. Woodstock Ventures LC, the co-owner of that company, who was part of the original Woodstock Festival. Now, when you say part of, John, I'm breaking out of your narrative here. Do you mean attended or helped organize?
Well, they're purposely vague. He was an organizer in some respect, but I get the impression that he wasn't like the main guy. He was like a helper.
But he wasn't like a guy in the field covered in feces.
Well, he might have been that too, but he was part of the actual putting it together to a degree.
Okay, so the co-owner released a few email newsletters to potential ticket buyers. He stated in part, "We have yet to understand why the financer would try to prevent this festival from happening by seemingly undermining us in this way. It is one thing to decide for oneself that it is best to move on, but it is entirely another thing to try and close the door on us. Woodstock never belonged to Dentsu, and they don't have the right to cancel it." Then the festival's attorney, who might be John Gentile, chipped in, and he said, "This confirms that Woodstock 50 is proceeding with the planning and production of the festival. Dentsu has no legal right or the ability to cancel it. All stakeholders, including the entertainers, should proceed with the understanding that the event will take place as planned, and if they have any questions, they should reach out directly." John,
all performers should proceed on the impression that they're not going to get paid.
Get on the moving sidewalk that leads into the meat grinder, please. Anyways, so fear not, the $18 Woodstock psychedelic tube is still for sale, and the official $52 Woodstock Festival chime remains available. So the merchandise has not been affected by all this drama.
John but the Gentile. $450 tickets are still not available.
John Gentile, what you are of a sound legal mind, one of the primary legal scholars of our time, and you have an interest in the music and entertainment world. What do you make of this gong show?
I don't see how it's not the end of Woodstock 50. If you don't have your funding, and if you don't have so a festival kind of has three main arms: funding, production, promotion. Woodstock Ventures LC is kind of the promotions, so they can advertise for it and get people to know about it. But they don't have anybody to actually throw it, which is the Superfly, and they don't have anybody to actually fund it, which is Dentsu. So I have no idea what they're – I don't see how they recover from this. I think they started planning way too late. I mean, to do something like this, you need at least a year in advance, maybe even more than a year in advance. You know, I mean, Coachella is planned out like 2 years in advance, or at least it started to, you know. So I just think these are people that said, "Oh, we own Woodstock, let's make some money," but they just got in over their head and the whole thing collapsed. I mean, they don't even have their permits yet. I'm already – I guess clearing certain things that I have to clear for an August show, hint, 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 and that's 175 people. You know what I mean? Not 175,000, right? So I'm more ahead of the game than Woodstock 50 is. So
are you already selling merch, John? Are you already selling themed merch for your August?
The Punky Psychedelic Tube. only $17. So the point is, I think these guys just in over their head. I think it's the end of Woodstock 50. And I, for a while, why am I taking such schadenfreude in the collapse of Woodstock 50? And I think I realized why. I don't really care about Woodstock, you know, and I don't really care if some music festival doesn't take place. I don't give a crap. But what I do think this symbolizes is that, like, more and more, as companies like Ticketmaster and so forth, is they haven't, they don't even try to hide the fact that they're just trying to separate as much money from you as possible. You know what I mean? It's almost so cynical. They're like, you're going to pay us $400, even though you're only going to get a $100 ticket, just because we want you to, and we know you're dumb enough to do it. So I'm kind of using this as my sacrificial lamb to express my distaste and annoyance at the modern mainstream music ticket and promotions economy, if you will. That's why I'm enjoying this collapse.
John, I'm happy that you're happy.
Thank you.
So you're taking out all your frustrations on poor Woodstock.
I got
to tell you, the thought of going to this thing, it was never on my radar anyway, but the lineup was so bad. Ugh. I mean, you can't be everything to everyone, and that's what they were kind of trying to do.
Yeah, exactly.
My plans have not changed based on any of this information. So
let's leave these scummy companies and their money alone for a little while, and we'll talk about a nice wholesome company, Live Nation. So so there is
John's wrath is rekindling right now. He's like a furnace right now, stoking.
So there's a German magazine. Do we have the name of the German magazine? Visions. It's not like.
Somebody had more hard content.
I wanted to have to pronounce something. All right. Anyways, it's a German magazine. It is boringly titled Visions, which does not seem like a German word to me. But it is. They're going to release a live Bad Religion album. So issue 314 of that magazine is coming out, and it's going to include Live at Rock AM Ring, June 3rd, 2018. Very nice. Very nice.
Rolls right off your tongue.
It is a bonus CD that is coming out with this thing. It has 10 songs on it, whole bunch of Bad Religion classics, and some cool new stuff. Let's see what's on here. Fuck You, Streets of America, I Want to Conquer the World, 21st Century Digital Boy, Wrong Way Kids, Generator, Sorrow, You, Infected, and Punk Rock Song. It's got the Bad Religion logo slapped all over it. It has a weird motorbike on the cover for some reason. Maybe that's what the Rock AM Ring is. I don't really know. But in any case, Bad Religion live record coming out for free with a magazine. What could be better? The interesting thing, though, is that this is a release that is licensed from Live Nation, the concert promoter, not from Epitaph, the record label that would ostensibly be involved with anything and everything Bad Religion. So it appears that the band is not actually releasing the CD through Epitaph or directly themselves or anything like that. Rather, it appears that Live Nation owns the rights to these particular live recordings and have licensed them out to the magazine. Now, while we don't have any particular confirmation on this, it does beg the question about, you know, how much is it the band's will that this is a product that exists in their discography now? And I assume John, that's really where your interest in this comes from.
I had two interests. Is if I was a Bad Religion fan, I'd be like, wow, this is awesome. I would, like, if this was off, I'd buy it in a second. But I think more interestingly is Live Nation is so powerful now that they're essentially, as part of their promotion, I mean, a band like Bad Religion has to play a certain, well, they don't have to, but they almost need to play a certain size venue because they're popular enough that they can't play small venues. It's unsafe. You know, they can't make any money. It's dangerous. And scalpers would go insane if they did. So they have to play medium to larger size venues. There's only one game in town. That's not Live Nation. So now Live Nation has leveraged that to the fact that, oh, not only are we the only place where you can pay, and not only do we get a cut of your merch sales, and not only do you have to pay us for playing here, and not only do we get to make our own beverage sales, but we also get free live albums out of you for playing here because we're the only game in town. And that's scary. Well,
they must have made them sign something that said this we have the rights to this performance.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So
Yeah, you're saying they basically can strong arm artists into that. Man, I wouldn't think that would last long. I would think this is going to make people get wise to that.
But
if everybody boycotts Live Nation, then they're going to have to change their ways. That's all there is to it. Artists are going to have some solidarity on this. But Bad Religion is, you know, a very mid-level band. You know, they play for 1,000 people a night. They're going to have to some of the big artists are going to probably have to get screwed before anything really happens.
And here's the counterattack is someone interviewed Fat Mike at Punk News, and NoFX was quite literally. Now, they could have played smaller venues, but they didn't want to. But NoFX quite literally could not get a show in the States at the Bad Religion size venue for a year. And so it basically
because of Live Nation.
Right. Because of the comments that Mike made that
yeah,
Live Nation
because didn't like. They essentially but I'm
saying,
banned.
Let's say Bad Religion says, no, Live Nation, we're not going to give you a live album for free. And they could say, all right, you're not going to play here ever. How about that? You know what I mean? So it's very
– NoFX, I think, would have a harder time because they're playing more like the 2,500 to 3,000 seat type places, which tend to be Live Nation places. I think Bad Religion could probably pull it off because I think there's enough 1,000, 1,500 seat places that are not under the thumb of Live Nation. It would just be a lot more work. When Live Nation is your partner, you know, half of your work is already done when you're setting up a tour. So, but I think they could, I think Bad Religion could do it.
I would be totally curious about the back end stuff that results in something like this existing. I'd be also curious about like how much a band and I say this not being a person that's ever released or made music myself, but having fantasized about like having that level of control. Like I feel that like if I was a band person, I'd be very persnickety about like what shows up in my discography. Like I wouldn't want to do anything that is going to be an odd duck thing in that list. And you know, like when you go and you look up a band, like even our X-Ray Specs revelation earlier in this show, right? Where you go and you look at their discography and you see that like, okay, like that's an album. That's a single. And then you see like a couple, like, questionable-ish live things show up in there,
right?
And I'm
right.
like you know, just as far as you know, it being an item in the list that has the same, you know, it's taken up just as much space as the band's real records. And here it is like some entry in their discography. And how much did everyone actually have to do with that? Like, did they care about that? And I feel that like I would want to not have my name show up a whole bunch of places where it's out of my control. Because like, if you're not building the legacy of that musical act, then like, what are you doing? So I would feel quite upset were I an artist where all of a sudden the control of, you know, the control of what that body of work is starts to slip out of my hands and become something else.
This was a festival appearance. This show.
We're presuming.
Sounds like it, right? But based on the weird name of it, I'm sure it was just buried in the fine print somewhere when they signed the contract. I'm assuming it kind of just got slipped by. I don't know. Maybe Bad Religion doesn't have enough team of lawyers. I don't know. John, looking for some side work?
I can't sue in Germany. You know what I mean? And that's the other thing is it's hard for Bad Religion to do anything about anything in Germany. You know what I mean?
Well, the fact of the matter is they've been, you know, Epitaph has some pretty deep pockets. They're no lightweight at this point, but I don't know. Maybe it's not worth pursuing.
I mean, honestly, I think what Live Nation did was legal and that Bad Religion knew they were signing a contract that allowed Live Nation to record them. You know what I mean? And there's nothing they can do about it, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, if Bad Religion fans say, you know what, this is not an official release, I won't buy it, then, you know.
Although judging
Once again,
by the
squelch is the problem.
Judging by the comments on Punk News, one of the comments was, "Holy shit, how do I buy this?" And then they figured it out. So
I don't know. I probably wouldn't.
Oh, what do you know?
Honestly, I would if it was off. Or you know, whoever.
But, okay. What if Keith Morris said, "John, Keith Morris, your hero, came and said, man, we did not want this record made." Then would you still buy it?
I still would, honestly.
You're a complicated man, John. You're a complicated man, Thanos. I agree with some of your policies, but not others.
You can buy it for €7. I mean, that's cheap enough.
Yeah, it's only like $10.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that are super cheap.
Of course, it'll cost you that much to ship it, too. But
keep stepping on my segs. Okay, here we go. it's dead now. So we're talking about sweatshops. So here you go. There is a Punks Against Sweatshops film that is on the way. An organization called Punk Ethics have started a campaign, which is called Punks Against Sweatshops. The idea for the campaign is they want to get bands to pledge to use Fair Labor Made t-shirts instead of clothing brands that use sweatshops or other unjust labor practices in production. So to that end, today, actually, on May 2nd, the organization has released a film called Punks Against Sweatshops, which includes interviews with numerous musicians on the issue. Who is on there? Well, the ones you would expect were this kind of issue. You got Jello, you got Crass, you got Propagandhi. All of them are in there. And John wants to note here that notably, all Alternative Tentacles t-shirts are made in the USA. All Steve Ignorant t-shirts are made in England. The Crass entity does not produce t-shirts at all, although Steve does his independently. And all Propagandhi shirts are made in fair labor environments. So these are three artists that are speaking what they actually do. So you can find a trailer to the thing on Punk News. I'm sure if you just go to YouTube and search for Punks Against Sweatshops, you can watch the whole thing right now. Now, I don't think any of us are going to argue for sweatshops. Good. But what really struck me here was, and I've mentioned this on the show before, and so forgive me, listener, if I'm repeating myself. But God, this makes me nostalgic for a simpler time.
This does?
This story, this issue. Because, John, when I was in high school, when I was just starting in university, at that time, like, the political document in my life was Naomi Klein's No Logo. The things that I was really interested in was, like, you know, like Adbusters magazine and people culture jamming, you know, and stuff like that. And what were our issues? Our issues were stuff like sweatshops. Like, the enemies in life was like Nike. Nike was the enemies, right? Was the enemy. Who else were we against? We were against, like, the Shell Corporation and Monsanto and things like that. Like, these scummy corporations doing horrible things to people around the world. Like, that was the enemy. And then today, John, it's way more complicated than that. Now we can't just be, you know, now there's fucking Nazis returned somehow in the years ensuing.
If we're being honest, it was more complicated then, Adam. You were just focused on the wrong things.
I know, but there was a time when I was like
living in an ignorant bliss.
That young political minded.
The
punk
young
rocker,
idealism that could see the small picture, but not the big picture.
Yeah. You were just like, you're picking up on all these, like, all these pet issues where you were just like, you were seeing injustice in the world and assuming that as you were growing from, like, a young, powerless teenager into a young adult, you know, you'd be able to craft a world where, you know, you could help resolve all of these, like, all these shitty things that were happening. And then all of a sudden it was like, you know, George W. Bush was in there, and we had the war in Iraq, and, like, now here the fuck we are with you know what we got. And I'm like, man, like, I long for being, like, you know, the
where's that self-righteous, headstrong young man I once was.
Yeah, right. And I'm like, so, like, I saw this story pop up and I was like, oh yeah, sweatshops. Like, that never went away. We didn't solve that problem. It's just that, like, we got distracted by, like, bigger, shittier things that seem to be happening.
Problems, yeah.
So I'm all for this cause. It's just that I keep seeing it through this lens of like, you know, hey Adam, you really cared about this once. Like, what happened?
Reminds you of your salad days, huh?
It does. Now I'm just sitting here, like, refreshing CNN and going, like, oh God, what's happening now? Right? And used to be a believer. I don't know in what, but I love that your dog keeps punctuating things that I say. It's great.
You know, I think I'm the only one still up. It is getting pretty late, and the dog clearly wants to go out, but I'm going to try to ignore her. Hang on, Sheena. I'm coming in a little bit.
John, what do you think of this story? What's your angle on it? I'm sure it wasn't my weird take.
Well, three quick things. First, I actually lied in this article. I said all alternative tentacles t-shirts are made in the United States. That's not true. Jello Biafra and the Guantanamo School of Medicine toured Brazil about 5 or 6 years ago, and they had t-shirts made in Brazil, and I have one of those rare t-shirts. So I technically lied a little bit. Second,
I'm going to go let my dog out. I hope to be back by the time you're done with your third point, John.
This does kind of bum me out. Quite famously, I came across a stash of vintage rock t-shirts from the early 90s and sold them on eBay. And Adam, every single one was made in USA. Now go find me a t-shirt made in USA. You can't do it. You really can't do it. You know, so it's so sad that t-shirts can be made in USA, but companies and even consumers don't give a shit because it's slightly cheaper when they're not. And that's kind of one of the reasons why the economy is kind of bad. I know the economy is quote good right now, but it really isn't, you know, at least with regards to non super mega rich people. And you know, a lot of people need jobs right now and that kind of thing. And those types of manufacturing jobs can exist in the United States. Just everyone wants to spend $6 for a t-shirt instead of 10 or 12. And that's a real bummer for me. The third thing I want to point out is this is great, man. Listen, punk rockers are always like, punk rock's about equality. Punk rock's about treating people right. I'm woke. Well, listen, if you're wearing a t-shirt made in a sweatshop, you're not woke. You know what I mean? You're wearing a shirt made in practically slave labor conditions or kind of close to that. I recommend all bands make used shirts made in USA or England or Canada or whatever country you're from. It can be done. Shirts made in USA are not that much more expensive than shirts made in, you know, in the Dominican Republic, in Sri Lanka, those areas. And they're better shirts and they last longer, and you're supporting your local community. I mean, punk rock is always like, support your local community. Well, buying a t-shirt made in America is supporting your local community. And not only that, it's not that much more expensive. Punk rockers need to learn t-shirt ain't $12. It's $20. Metalheads know it. Why don't the punk rockers know it?
There you go.
I support this 100%. Will it change anything? No. Because the point is, when it comes down to it, people vote with their dollars. And time and time and time again, people have proven they'd rather be cheap and get more cheap shit than get one nice thing for more money. And that's the truth. That's why Walmart exists. Walmart is garbage. Everything in Walmart is garbage. But Walmart is the richest or second richest company in the United States, at least when it comes to merchandise.
John, I can't argue with any of this. So, you can find this documentary over on YouTube, folks. That's where you can go listen to it. I guess I'll play a song unless Tom's back and wants to play a song. Tom, you're not back. All right, here you go. So.
Hey, I just got back.
You just got back, John. Tom, do you want this song slot?
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, I could do it last two. It really doesn't matter, Adam. My dog is getting older and more persnickety, and I just got the impression that she wasn't going to leave me alone until I let her out. So anyway, she's all good.
All right. Well,
I'm going to play. So, there's a new 7-inch coming out, very limited quantities, being put out by 10-Foot Pole, the long-running California punk band, and it's going to be a split with a band called Benny and the No Goods, which is actually a one-man band out of Indianapolis. Makes some really good pop punk, one of my favorite albums of that style last year, but they're doing a split, and it's... It got cover art by the guy who did some Screeching Weasel stuff, and it's real cool stuff, limited to 300 copies, and it's about ADD and ADHD, and it's also a charitable thing where all the profits are going to, don't ask me the name of the group, but that does research on these type of things and helps the treatment of ADD and ADHD. So we're going to play the Benny and the No Good side, and this song is called ADHD by Benny and the No Goods. It will be on their new record, which I think comes out the 1st of June, which is going to be called Nothing's Cool. But anyway, this is Benny and the No Goods, ADHD. I want to see, I want to be, I want to do everything there is to do. ADHD, ADHD, ADHD. I want to make, I want to take, I got the shakes, I want to take a break. ADHD, ADHD, ADHD. I don't want to be focused, I don't want to be confused, I don't want to get distracted, I don't want to be.
Back, those Benny the No Goods. We're this is a long show. Okay, let's talk about a few quick things before we get rolling here. First of all, there is a new World Inferno Friendship Society record coming out. The new album comes out in October. It is going to be out on Alternative Tentacles, and the title is "All Borders Are Porous to Cats," which is very true. It's going to be a follow up to their 2014 record, "This Packed Funeral." Of which I was quite fond. John, you are a World Inferno mega fan. You're stoked, I imagine.
I am stoked, and I'm cool thing about World Inferno is all of their albums are like really different. I guess Red Eyed Soul and the Addicted to Bad Ideas, they're kind of similar in sound, but other than that, like every World Inferno album is great and very distinct. And no one has any idea of what this new one's going to sound like, really. Actually, though, Punk News, on one of our cassette tapes, we put out an album, a song that I think it was Summer Soiree Mixtape 1 has a exclusive World Inferno song, which I think was intended to be on this album, but I think the band has changed so many times, it's not even going to be on that album. So get Summer Soiree Mixtape number 1, Rare World Inferno track. Anyways, basically, since the last album, nearly the entire band has turned over, and a lot of the key members have turned over. There's about 3 or 4 members that have left over from the last album, and from the album before that, there's like zero, except for Jack Terrycloth, maybe one other. So nearly the fun thing about World Inferno is the band itself destructs and then reconstructs about every 4 years. That's about the time period. And so they're a totally different band, more or less, every 4 years, and they keep doing their thing. And so just by seeing them live, I think this one is going to harken back to the earliest stuff that's almost kind of like a old world, kind of like folk, but also like klezmer and polka and all that kind of stuff mixed together. I guess they call it gypsy punk. So this one will probably have a little bit more gypsy punk than the previous releases. But who knows? This could sound like anything. And that's what's exciting about this band. They never do the same record twice.
I'm excited.
Long gap between records this time, isn't it?
Yeah, they usually do. But with them, that's not a bad thing. Because World Inferno is a band that doesn't put out bad stuff. Everything is good or really good or amazing. And it's always interesting, you know.
Well, yeah, so that's coming out. That's exciting. So a couple other things that we want to mention that you should probably be informed about. There is a new Hot Water Music song that is online. There is an interesting wrinkle to this one, though. Well, a couple interesting wrinkles, I guess. So the EP is called Shake Up the Shadows. It's going to be out on May 24th on Epitaph Records. The first track from that EP is called Rebellion Story, and it is currently streaming. You can go find it. This is going to be a 5-song set that they are putting out. The couple interesting things about this are, well, first of all, is that this is coming out on Epitaph. It is not coming out on Rise, and Rise has been kind of reissuing the band's, you know, all the band's non-Epitaph material has been coming out there lately. So that's the first thing that is just kind of curious, something to take note about. The second thing is that it appears that this record has been recorded with, let's see here. Maybe I have not confirmed this. I'm not sure now if this, and it was not in the story we posted, but the question is that whether this record was recorded with Chris Wallard or whether it was recorded with Chris Cresswell. So Wallard, the band's, you know, original guitarist, co-vocalist, along with Chuck Reagan, has not been performing with the band live recently in the past while. And there was a medical condition or something that was causing him to not appear with the band. And I am not sure if it was ever really confirmed with what that was, or if it was just kind of like left to his own privacy, which is a totally fine thing to happen. But so they've been playing with Chris Cresswell from the Flatliners. He's the vocalist for the Flatliners in Wallard's place. So I'm unsure about exactly how much Chris is involved in this. Now, Cresswell went and posted a link to this song on his Instagram, and he said, you know, for the record, he said, "Life's a trip, watch where you're going. To say it's both an honor and a privilege to be included in these big new moves from Hot Water Music coming May 24th would be the understatement of the year." So he is, you know, he's boosting it, so which makes me think that, you know, I assume that Cresswell's on this and involved, but whether Wallard is, I don't know at this point. So it's one thing for one of the band's principal members to, you know, not be able to tour with them for medical reasons or something. It's another for them to go and to start recording without that person. So interesting. I might be wrong. Maybe Wallard's all over this, but I'm not too sure. So anyways, that's going on. You should go check it out. Neither of you dorks have anything to say about Hot Water Music, I assume.
Not really.
Yeah. Johnny?
Hot Water Music is doing their Hot Water Music thing, man.
Insight. All right, John.
John prefers whichever Chris has a better beard.
So, Wallard would probably have a better beard. Okay, so the last thing here is you can check out that Cookie the Clown record that Fat Mike is putting out independently of the rest of NoFX right now. John, you interviewed him. What do you have to say about this? What do you want to talk about this record?
This record was very polarizing. I think most of the punk news readers didn't like it. I actually thought this was a really, and we talked about this last episode, I actually thought this record was really interesting and really clever and really daring, and I think it's one of the most interesting punk rock records for a long while. Is it enjoyable to listen to? Is it fun to listen to? No. Is it challenging to listen to? Yes. But is it an interesting artistic statement that I don't think I've seen before, at least in punk rock? Yes. And by that, I mean it's a very sad record. It's a very haunting record. But I think most importantly is, more so than ever before, in punk rock, so many bands are like, I'm a good person. I'm right. I never do anything bad. And people that do bad things are evil, and I hate them, and I'm good, and I'm perfect, and other people aren't perfect like me, and that's why the world's so tough on me. This record is kind of the exact opposite. This record is Mike saying, I'm a bad guy. I've done bad stuff. I'm a selfish person, and I feel sad. But what's also interesting about it is, there's a lot of finger-pointing on this album. He blames a lot of people for a situation. At some point, maybe it's not everybody else, maybe it's you, but also, is the reason that he's in the situations that he's in, is it because the world has done this to him, or is it because of the decisions that he's made? And I think to a degree, the record acknowledges that, but doesn't make an argument one way or another. And so in doing so, I think it's a very pure record in that it's someone expressing how they truly feel without reservations as to how that will be interpreted or what they should say. And I think that's a very raw record and a daring artistic statement.
Cool. I've yet to sit down and to partake in this whole thing because
it's a sad record.
I'm a little worried that it's going to bum me out.
It will.
Yeah, I got to say, I have not a lot of interest in it. But based on the two songs I've heard, but isn't it interesting that he has to go into character to say what he really wants to say? I mean, that in itself is a pretty powerful statement, isn't it?
That's interesting.
The other question is, I mean, he says some really dark things on this, and in my interview, he basically suggests that he's in a bad place, and I don't want to put any bad luck on anybody, but I hope this doesn't go really bad, because if it goes really bad, we'll all feel real bad, you know. Or just awesome performance piece, and then after a while, he's going to be like, ha ha, I got you all, I made you feel bad, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Laughing all the way to the bank.
I don't think this record's big that much bank.
No. Well, that'll be depressing. He's a businessman at the end of the day, right?
Well, actually, he addresses that. I'll just say it. He addresses that in the album. And in the album, he seems to have some resentment against some people with regards to the business aspect of what he's achieved, as opposed to the artistic aspect of what he wants to do. And so I'm not going to say exactly what he means, but if you listen to the record.
Like one makes the other less valuable? Or one makes the other less something?
Basically, you don't appreciate me and what I've done for you all is what it was. What the message is, you know? And that's very raw and daring and you know, subjective emotion, but at least it's honest. But is it accurate? I don't know.
Cool.
Wow. He doesn't come off looking good on this album. But he comes off looking honest, which is interesting. Yeah.
Willingness to make himself look bad is it's a tough thing to do.
Yeah, man.
I'm going to have to listen to the whole thing. It just seems like it's like a joy killer, you know? It sucks the fun out of the room.
I guess the two main questions are is Mike a sympathetic character, or is he where he is because of his own choices? And also, I hope he's not in a really bad place like he suggests on the album and in that video. He sort of seemed to downplay them in the interview. So I hope I have Guar flashbacks. I remember with Guar, Brocky was like making fun of crack and heroin and making fun of junkies. And then 3 weeks later, he's dead from a heroin overdose. You know what I mean? So sometimes it's way realer than you think it. Like you think it's
or is Mike lying again? Is he just a habitual, is he incapable of being honest?
That's true too. Like if someone's joking about heroin, you're like, oh, well, they're not on heroin because they're making fun of heroin. But he was, you know? So who knows? Mm. Bro,
yeah,
Is this record gonna end up on year end best of list?
Yes. What was that, Adam?
Oh, I don't know. I was gonna try to figure out who you were fighting with now.
I'm fighting with people that didn't fund the off record album. Adam, we were $23,000 away from having the greatest album.
You know who could afford $23,000? Fat Mike.
That's true. Very true. Instead, he's giving it to dominatrixes. Dude's got
Cokie the Clown money.
Who more deserves $23,000, dominatrixes or Keith Morris? I think that question answers itself.
I wouldn't even want to venture a guess.
Keith Morris. I'll answer it for you.
Will he come to my house in a leather outfit and whip me? Was that one of the options?
I'm not John? Pimp. I'm not Keith Morris's pimp.
I believe that was at the $1,000 donation level.
Adam, should all the listeners feel bad for not funding off? The answer is yes.
Yeah.
What's your honest opinion, Adam, now that you know the answer?
I cannot argue with what the answer is. So John, I think that is it for us. I'll play a song to get us out of here. If anyone wants to send us email, it's podcast@punknews.org. That is how you do that. We've given you a number of things that we want some feedback on this week. So please provide feedback to all of those. And it would help everyone, you know, continue with their lives. So anyways, here you go. So there is a record label that is out in Vancouver called Mint Records that has released all sorts of wonderful things over the years. Long-running label, very near and dear to my heart. They have a record coming out from a band called Necking. So Necking has been, they have like a single cassette EP out, but outside of that, mostly been playing live in and around the BC area. Lots of goodwill towards Necking from the various members of the Canadian punk scene that I seem to run into. Everyone loves these folks. So they have a record. It is their first full length. It's coming out on July 5th, and it's called Cut Your Teeth. So the first single from that record just came out. It is called Big Mouth. And the band's drummer and lyricist, Melissa Kuipers, she was quoted in the press release for this, where she said that Big Mouth is the dollar store version of Our Lips Are Sealed by the Go-Go's, as covered by Hillary and Haley Duff. It's about having a mediocre time with someone and then leaving them convinced you're obsessed with them. The song is the brave face you put on after you've overshared and overstayed your welcome. So I don't know how much that comparison plays out. I'll leave it to you, listener, to figure out if that actually makes sense. But anyways, the song is rocking. It's super fun. So the song is called Big Mouth. It is from the record called Cut Your Teeth, which is out in July from Neckers. Here you go. Oh, fuck. Necking. God. John. It's Necking, not Neckers. The Neckers was a band. There's like six different bands that have some variation of neck in the word. There's a band from Ottawa called Neck. They just sent me their record. It's really good and fun and Ramonesy. This isn't that band. This is Necking. Necking. See you later.